If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Dear Lovejoy podcast, sponsored by Cooker, spelt Cooker, pronounced Cooker, 100 degree boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. Today is another special.
Woohoo!
Today's guest is...
I'm Charlie Morley, and I write books and run workshops about lucid dreaming and mindfulness of dream and sleep.
Yes, Charlie Morley. He's written a book called Lucid Dreaming Made Easy, A Beginner's Guide to Waking Up in Your Dreams. So it's a guide, basically, on being able to wake up in your dreams and, maybe have a journey, a fantasy journey in your dreams. But there's also many other sides to actually being able to wake up in your dreams and do lucid dreaming. Things, health reasons, basically, for mindfulness, mental health issues, how to get over ailments, apparently. Anyway, he explains it all in the podcast. Let's listen to him. This is Charlie Morley.
This is just a guide to modern life. Modern life is hard to get just right. It can frustrate you and annoy. And if it does, right into Dear Lovejoy.
Charlie, thank you very much for joining me today. Welcome to my kitchen. I've bought you a present. I buy everyone presents.
Ah, yes.
But I keep going to the health shop now. I'm looking for nice gifts for people, which are slightly different. And my health shop has got this new stuff in, and it's called Cult Vinegar Live. And it's live vinegar, and it's small batches of live vinegar. This one's made from red wine. Here we go. So,
and this is good for your stomach and stuff.
I think so.
Okay, this is quite cool because I had a lucid dream about 6 months ago where I became lucid in the dream and I asked, what do I need to know? So I asked my unconscious mind, what do I need to know? And this dream character turned up, this like Cockney guy, and he went, oi, come here. And I was like, oh, he's going to give me advice. And he went, sort your gut out.
Ah.
And I went, sort my gut out. And he went, yeah. And then he went, and get some sleep. And I went, I'm literally asleep right now. And he goes, don't be funny. And at that time, I was traveling and had loads of jet lag and wasn't getting enough sleep. But anyway, since that dream about 6 months ago, anytime I see any kind of probiotics, prebiotics, stuff like this, I always get it. So that's a very cool coincidence. Thank you.
Right, okay. Well, it says here that cult vinegar is made in small batches out of premium things like wines. Because the vinegars are not pasteurized, they contain live bacteria, which many people regard as being good for their health. So I think it's a couple of drops in the morning. And
I'm
a little
taking
bit
this
of,
right now, mate, little, live. Oh, God, it's horrible.
It must be good for you then.
Oh, I think you're supposed to put it in water or something. I just put it in neat.
Yeah, I think you're supposed to.
Yeah, anything tastes that bad, it's got to be good for you, mate. Thank you very much. That's kind.
So how are you feeling today? Are you feeling well?
Yeah, I'm feeling good. Sun shining.
You're all happy.
Yeah, life is good.
So tell us a bit about yourself then. How did you become a lucid dream teacher?
I was into lucid dreaming from really young, like when I was 12. Well, from when I was 11, for my 12th birthday, I wanted this sleep mask thing, which has a little computer in it that is supposed to be able to tell when you're dreaming by checking the rapid eye movement of your eyelids, and then it flashes red lights while you're asleep, which just wakes you up the first few times, but eventually you get used to it and you start dreaming about red traffic lights or people flashing lights into your eyes. And if you can make the connection, it basically gives you a lucid dream because you can be like, oh wow, that's the mask, so that must mean I'm in a dream right now. So anyway, I remember before my 11th birthday, I'd cut out this little bit from like the Gadget magazine in one of the Sunday papers that my dad was reading. And I was like, oh, dad, this is what I want for my birthday. And I knew I'd had those dreams before, dreams where I knew I was dreaming as I was dreaming, but this mask said you could have them all the time. I didn't get it, but that was the first kind of concrete memory that my dad confirmed, like, yeah, I remember that, because it was 200 quid. And I remember thinking, I'm not buying you that for your birthday. So then I guess I went back to being a 12-year-old. Then when I was 16, I got interested in, like a lot of 16-year-olds, you know, meditation and psychedelics, and I started smoking weed, and dreams became really interesting, and UFOs, and lucid dreaming seemed like a real winner because it was this real psychedelic experience that you could have by yourself and you could teach yourself to do it. And it was like super trippy because you could go to sleep and be like, oh my God, I'm actually in a dream right now. I know my body's asleep in bed. I know this is a huge three-dimensional virtual reality simulation of my mind. And I'm in control, so I thought then. So you could fly about, meet movie stars and have sex and be really good at skateboarding and all this kind of stuff. So I just got into it for that. Then a couple of years later, I got into Buddhism. And then they told me it's this whole spiritual practice. Then I met my teacher and did all this training. And then eventually got asked to teach.
Okay, you're going to, hopefully for us later on, you'll tell us how to do it, the basic principles of doing it. I know it's a bit more in depth in your book, but just give us the principles. But first of all, so you say there's a sort of type of meditation in Buddhism is there to try and get you into your lucid dreams.
Yeah, there's a whole tradition. It's called Milam Naljor, which means basically means dream yoga. Milam means dream and Naljor means yoga or kind of natural state, but often translated as yoga. And that is the spiritual practice of lucid dreaming that goes back at least 1,000 years in the Tibetan tradition. Most of the Western techniques to induce lucid dreams are actually based on the Tibetan techniques, whether they know it or not. I guess it's a similar kind of mechanics to do it. The big difference is in the Western tradition, it's kind of have a lucid dream to either have fun or have a lucid dream to work with nightmares or trauma or inner child work, you know, psychological stuff. Whereas from the Buddhist tradition, it's really far out. It's to explore the nature of reality. It's to learn to see how the mind creates reality with an end goal to realize that this waking life is like a dream. So who knows?
Okay, I suppose we'll start with what are dreams in your mind, what are dreams?
What is a dream? There are kind of three interpretations of this. The neuroscience view, or used to be, that dreams are just the firing of neurons. There's like no pattern to them. They're completely random. Anyone who's had a dream knows that's not true. If you're in love with someone, you dream about them. If you've had a really kind of bad argument with your boss during the day, you might have a kind of a nightmare that night or something. So we know that dreams are based on our psychological experience of the day. They seem to be internal psychological reflections of our current mental state. If you look at the evolutionary basis of dreams, that seems to hold weight too. All mammals dream. Pub quiz fact, apart from the duck-billed platypus and the anteater, they have different visual cortex, so they don't dream. But mammals dream and humans do.
Hold on, what do they have, different visual
cortex? Yeah, it's basically, because they don't have the same visual cortex, they won't be dreaming in kind of visuals like other mammals do. But if you've seen like a dog dream or something, you can see it's dreaming that it's running or playing with a ball or something like that. So they dream in a similar way, as in they're seeing stuff.
When you see a baby dream, everyone goes, what's he dreaming about? And everyone goes, milk, milk, we're dreaming about milk. Boobs, milk. That's what they always say. Do you think you need to experience something before you dream?
Well, this is interesting. If you look at why we dream, and we do have some concrete evidence of why we dream now, it's memory reconsolidation. So we dream so we can remember stuff. How do we know this? Because if you take someone's dreams from them, they've done studies on both rats and on humans, they forget stuff. Like you show rats how to find cheese in a maze. That night, half the rats, you allow them to sleep and dream. Half of them, you stop them dreaming. You can give them sleep, but take away their dreams by finding out when they're going to be dreaming. How you do that, I don't know. And the rats that don't dream can't find the cheese the next day. Even stuff like Guantanamo Bay, the sleep torture they were doing there, they were stopping the inmates dreaming. They were allowing them to sleep. They were taking their dreams. Because if you take someone's dreams from them...
Hold on, how can you stop someone from dreaming?
They put them in certain stress positions that allowed them to go into deeper stages of sleep, but not into the muscular paralysis that's required for REM dreaming sleep. I mean, that's horrible, man. Imagine working out exactly how you can take someone's dreams. I mean, if you strip someone of REM dreaming sleep within like a couple of weeks, they'll sign anything. Psychosis will set in very quickly. So we know that dreams play a role of reconsolidation of memory and integration of psychological trauma. So if you prevent someone from integrating their trauma and remembering anything, they go mad.
Have you ever seen the footage of an octopus sleeping?
Yeah, isn't that cool? And it's changing its colors. Yeah, I got tagged in that so many times when that came out.
That is incredible, isn't it?
Really cool, isn't it?
Yeah. All right. So what are the stages of sleep then? We sleep in cycles.
Yeah.
So we go to REM and then we go into our deep sleep.
It's actually the other way around.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so you go hypnagogic state, which is like That falling asleep process. So your eyes are closed, very drowsy. You might get, do you ever get those jerks?
Yeah.
Myoclonic jerk. Not myoclonic jerks. They call
Why do we have those? Some people say because we used to live in trees.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a evolutionary theory is that when we were monkeys in trees, when we went into the sleep paralysis of dream, we'd kind of grip tight of the tree that we were hanging out in. There's another theory, actually. It's the body's response to a lowered level of respiration. So if you fall asleep really quickly, if you're like really sleep deprived, sometimes you get those jerks. Almost like a kind of a restart for your heart. The body just wants to make sure that you're not
clear.
Basically, yeah.
What's that thing called?
Yeah, that's something I forgot what it's called. The recess, defib. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So if you do have a lot of those jerks, probably you're a little bit sleep deprived because you're falling asleep so quickly. Anyway, so you've got hypnagogic, which is that falling asleep process. Then you've got light sleep, where you get a lot of kind of procedural memory being integrated. You might be like, if you'd just learned a new skill, or let's say you're doing a driving test, in that stage two sleep, you're going to be going through the process of working the clutch and the accelerator and stuff. It's that kind of procedural memory. Then you go into deep sleep, where you have this almost entire blackout. I mean, the brain never switches off, but the closest it gets to switching off is deep sleep. You're in like standby mode on your DVD player, you know, with the red lights on, but it's still plugged in.
Yeah.
And the brain waves are that delta. So it's sometimes called delta wave. And if you look at the brain waves of someone awake, their brain waves are very close and a high amplitude. So tick, 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 like that. You can't see my hand because it's podcast. Deep sleep is the opposite. It's like, boom, really long, slow brain waves. So your brain's almost entirely switched off. And that's when human growth hormone is released. That's why your hair grows, your nails grow, your muscles grow. And then after all that, then you have your period of dream. So by the time you're dreaming, you are sound asleep. That's why when people think like, oh, on a lucid dream, am I half awake, half asleep? No. By the time you get to dreaming, you've been asleep for like 80, 90 minutes. So you're out for the count.
Sorry. So it's deep sleep, then REM.
Yeah.
So REM is where you dream.
Dreaming. Yeah. So the REM dreaming comes at the end of every cycle. And that's roughly 90 to 100 minutes. Those cycles continue through the night. But the main thing to remember is first three cycles. So first 4.5 hours of sleep, mainly deep sleep, little bits of dreaming. Second three, after 4.5 hours, however long you sleep, then you're going to have mainly dreams and not much deep sleep. So for lucid dreaming, you'd focus on the second half of the night, and most people will find lucid dreaming easier in those kind of last 2 or 3 hours of the
sleep. So if deep sleep is good, let me get this sorted. If deep sleep is good for your muscle repair and your hair growing,
and your brain.
Doesn't seem to work in my case anymore. But when you do dreaming in the REM, that is where you're learning.
Different kind of learning. A lot of procedural learning happens in stage two sleep, but a lot of emotional...
clutch control is learned in the deep sleep.
In stage two, in light sleep. Yeah. Deep sleep is about kind of flushing toxins through the brain, human growth hormone being released. And then dreaming sleep, REM sleep, is about psychological integration. It's about integrating trauma. It's about, you know, if you spent... the evolutionary basis of dreaming is to dream about how to run away from the saber-toothed tiger. So this is why nightmares are good. You know, having a nightmare every now and again is very good. It's like an MOT for the mind. It's just checking your survival mechanism. You know, every now and again, we'll have a sexy dream or we'll have a violent dream. And you think, well, that wasn't linked to anything in my daytime experience. No, but it's just the body just checking you. You still got your fight or flight. You still got your survival mechanisms in there.
When do you wake up? You wake up because a lot of our listeners listening to this will wake up in the middle of the night, right? Because their body will force them into waking up.
Well, there's another stage for that. That's called the hypnopompic state, which is the state of waking up. And that's really cool. You know, if you wake up with an alarm, you just feel like you've been sleeping or dreaming and then boom, you're awake.
Yeah.
But if you wake up a bit slower, like on a Saturday morning or something where the bird song wakes you up, you notice there's that bit where your eyes are still closed. You wouldn't say you're asleep anymore, but you wouldn't say you're fully woken up. You're just kind of resting in that state. That's called the hypnopompic state. Very interesting brain state that. A lot of people find kind of insight comes to them then. A lot of kind of poetry is written in the middle of the night because they come out of that state. But also that idea of the 4 a.m. demons, like a lot of the veterans I work with find that state to be quite shocking because the mind goes into deep clarity. So anything you've been repressing during the day in the hypnopompic state, boom, it comes up really, really clear.
So I wonder if you wake up in the middle of the night, that's just after that, is it? Because when people wake up in the middle of the night, their mind's racing and they can't get back to sleep.
I mean, any time you wake up, you have to go through the hypnopompic. Like hypnagogic is the doorway in, hypnopompic is the doorway out. It just depends how long you spend in those doorways.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But what I'd say, when people wake up in the night, just kind of check. It can be quite interesting to check when you're waking up a lot of people find it's exactly 4 to 4.5 hours after they first go to bed. And that can be quite nice, especially when you work with insomniacs, because you know, they then know it's that's normal. You know, I had a veteran I worked with once, and the first day he came down and he was talking about, oh yeah, 4.5 hours of sleep, I had a full on panic attack. And we were kind of thinking this was a bad thing he was saying, but he was smiling and saying, exactly 4.5 hours. See, it's just like you said. Mm. And it had been normalized. He still had a panic attack in the middle of the night, but to know that it was normal cycle, that that had happened.
So when we grew up in this country, you just think dreams are just a nothing.
Yeah, just a dream.
And right? People, you know, are the water cooler at school. You go, hey, what did you dream about last night? Or something. Yeah. And then people bore you with their dreams and everyone goes, oh, I'm not interested because it's not real. But you think, and I think as well, by the way, you think there's more of a reason to the dreams and what they're doing.
Yeah, I don't think every dream is laden with mystical meaning. Some dreams were just downloading stuff we did in the day. But okay. Every now and again, the dream will use metaphor to communicate something to us, very important.
So anxiety, which is one that a lot of people dream about. I assume that you get an anxiety dream because you're obviously, right, let's start at the beginning here. Dreaming is obviously very important to us because mm-hmm. we're mammals, we have to do it 8 hours, we could get eaten by predators. So clearly our brains are powerful and we decided that it was a good idea to go to sleep for long periods of time. Mm-hmm. We actually nearly put ourselves in paralysis as well, which is a really bad idea.
Exactly, for survival, what the hell are we doing?
Exactly, so it's clearly very important to our brain and we're smart. I assume that when you get anxiety, it's the way that your brain, your mind, whoever you are, your, you know, the bit that is Tim or the bit that is Charlie is going, right, we've got a problem here. We've got anxiety. So in the case of X-Forces, military personnel, they're going, their brains are constantly going at night, right, we've got to be aware because we could die. Mm-hmm. Am I right?
Yes, you are. I mean, with PTSD nightmares and anxiety dreams, it's like that natural function of the brain gets stuck on a loop and then it becomes kind of dysfunctional. But for everyday anxiety, studies have shown that anxiety dreams are actually good. They prepare us. So for example,
okay, so go on then.
Let's say like you're flying to Ibiza tomorrow and tonight you have a really bad dream that you've lost your passport, Gatwick station's airport's closed, you can't get the train the way there, all this kind of stuff. And you think, oh, it's a predictive dream. I'm never going to make it to Ibiza. You're actually now more likely to make it to Ibiza because what's the first thing you do? You check where's the passport, you check my traffic reports, you check all this. So anxiety dreams are actually a good thing. And a recent study from a couple of years ago at the Sorbonne in Paris, they looked at medical students, right? And they found that medical students who had anxiety dreams or nightmares about failing their exams the night before their finals did 20 to 30% better than those who did not. So there's a theory now that anxiety dreams actually prepare us for the worst so it doesn't happen. They're a good thing.
So you don't beat yourself up and try and get rid of anxiety dreams.
No.
Realize they're a lesson.
Yeah.
All right. Can you predict the future from your dreams? I know people think that. I don't actually. I believe in everything else you've said here, but I don't believe they can look into the future. But some people believe this.
You know, Carl Jung had an interesting thing on the take on this. He said it wasn't about prophecy of the future, but more like it was more working on the data we've got. He said the unconscious mind the unconscious mind takes in such huge amounts of data that it can make pretty good algorithms of possibility.
Okay, I love that.
Now he said most of them are wrong. So we just dream that the, you know, incorrect prediction of the future, but sometimes they're right. So for example, let's say you're out with a couple of friends and consciously, you don't notice this, but unconsciously, you notice a shared touch of the hand. You notice an exchange phone number at the end. Your unconscious takes in, wow, these two friends are getting on really well. They're kind of vibing here, right? And then you have a dream that in a year's time, they get married. And then a year later, they get married. Oh my God, it was a predictive dream. I predicted the future. Well, maybe you did, or maybe your unconscious took in all that data that you consciously didn't see and made a pretty good prediction of possibility.
Okay, did Freud agree with that? Because they were always arguing about dreams, those two, weren't they?
No, and I'm definitely a Jungian, not a Freudian.
Are you? What's the difference in what their thoughts were on dreams?
Jung believed that Freud was very limited in his belief, that his kind of egocentric view of dreams, that a lot of it was about the mother principle and about unfulfilled desires. He said, this is way bigger. I mean, you know, Jung gave us archetypes. He gave us the collective unconscious. So instantly he brings us out of our conscious mind into something much bigger. Just something about the predictive dreams or future dreams. Yeah, me too. But I've had a couple of things which seem to show there can be some prediction. I mean, I got lucid once and asked for the lottery numbers. Well, I got lucid and I said, give me the lottery numbers. If I win, I'll give the money to charity. So that was my thing. Get lucid. If I win, I'll give the money to charity. And then this dude appears, like, kind of looks like a security guard crossed with a policeman, like authority figure. Definitely, I took that. And I said, have you got the lottery numbers for me? And he kind of pointed. And on a wall, it said BBC. And I thought, BBC? Oh, the BBC lottery. And then he nodded. And I said, give me the numbers. And he gave me three numbers. I can't actually remember what they were, but whatever. 25, 46, and 3. And I was like, okay, 25, 46, 3. And then he repeated them again. And I got really excited and I woke up. So I only got three numbers. But instantly, I got out of bed. I got into Google. My wife was asking what I was doing. I was like, I got the numbers in the dream. So I went on the BBC lottery. The next one was the Wednesday draw, not the big Saturday one. And I put in the three numbers I got. Then you had to put in three more. So I just put in 1, 2, and 3 for those three other numbers. And the three numbers I got in the dream came up and I won like 25 quid or something like that, which I gave to the Buddhist Center. Now, I don't know whether that's completely random or not, but a lady who lived at the Buddhist Center, who's a journalist, who's into kind of fact checking, she did the maths on that. And she said even to get three numbers out of the possible, how many thousands of possibilities there were, was not one in a million, but was hundreds of thousands. I don't know, man. I've never been able to disprove that.
But did you know the person who came to you?
In the dream?
Yeah.
No, it was this kind of like security guard figure.
So when you dream, it doesn't have to be people that you've had. You can invent people.
Yeah, there's that old myth, isn't there, that you only dream about people you know about.
Is it myth?
I mean, I could give you a pen and paper and say, can you draw a space station on Mars? And even though you've never seen a space station on Mars, I bet you could. Based on stuff you've seen from films, of course, your infinite imagination, past memory, this kind of stuff. I don't buy into that.
So I can lucid dream awake as well, potentially, can't I? Because it's just my imagination. I'm pretty good at inventing stuff. Like I can now say there's an elephant in the kitchen and it's sat on that table. If we all look over at that table, we can all see an elephant, can't we?
Not yet.
Oh, come on.
But if you're in a lucid dream, you could literally see it.
You can imagine. You can imagine an elephant on that table.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So I can imagine riding that elephant now because I've got it. Everyone sitting in listening to this can imagine riding an elephant now. Yeah. So we've got that power to do it even when we're awake.
But crucially, the brain doesn't think you're actually riding an elephant, does it? The brain knows you're imagining it.
So when we're in our lucid dream...
Yeah, that's the crux. You've nailed the crux of it.
You think... You are doing it.
Not you think. When you're in a lucid dream, the brain assumes you are awake. Once you activate the right dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, the brain doesn't think you're having a lucid dream. It thinks you're having this experience. And that's how the neural pathways things work.
But you know you're not, because you know you're lucid dreaming.
I know, consciously, but the brain doesn't. So the brain acts as if I'm awake, which is why if you do squats in a lucid dream, the brain thinks you're actually doing squats.
Hold on, so you're removing yourself from your brain here.
Yeah, we realize that consciousness and the brain are not...
Okay.
We can, in a lucid dream, I know that I'm in a dream. Yeah. I know my body is asleep in bed.
Right.
I know it's an illusion, right?
Okay.
But the brain doesn't.
All right.
The brain thinks I'm actually awake.
So what are you then? Your consciousness.
Wow, no idea. You just asked me the hard problem of consciousness on your podcast. You expect me to answer it.
Hold on.
No freaking idea.
But you're saying you know you're in a lucid dream, but your brain doesn't. And your senses are sensing.
Yeah.
Right? So we're all fully, like you're awake now. You're fully engaged. Your senses, can you smell in your dreams?
Yeah, yeah.
You can smell, you can see, you can hear, you can feel. Your emotions are on all four, you're flowing, Your thought processes are going,
Mm-hmm.
You can feel everything else. But that's not you, you're saying. You're something else looking on that.
Well, here's the interesting, so in a dream, let's say I have all that awareness in the lucid dream, but then at the same time, I can say things like, give me the lottery numbers, and someone appears and gives them. And you think, well, who appeared? Who answered that call? Who answered the question? Or if you get lucid, you can say more light now. And the dream, just the lights go up in the dream. And you think, well, who put the lights up? You know, was that me answering me? Or is there some sort of greater awareness beyond the dream that I'm dialoguing with? I mean, brilliant question. Who knows? But this is why we get to the Buddhist thing. That's why lucid dreaming is used to explore the nature of reality, to exactly look at those questions.
But... I'm just going to get deep for 2 seconds and we'll get back to reality or my reality. But you could be dreaming now. This could be an illusion Because it's only your consciousness looking in on yourself now.
From a Buddhist point of view, it is.
Right. So you're an illusion now and you're an illusion when you're asleep. Do they blur? If you do too much.
Yeah, good question.
Lucid dreaming. Mm. Are you going to start blurring it into your supposed awake life?
Yeah, weirdly, quite the opposite happens. Because the main skill of the lucid dreamer is to be able to be in an illusory state, the dream, but not be duped by it. Every time we dream, the dream is so convincing, we think we're awake. Think about it. When we dream, we don't think we're dreaming. We think we're awake. It's only when we wake up in the morning, we go, oh, that was a dream. While we're in the dream, we think it's real. So we're constantly lost in the illusion of the dream. A lucid dreamer's main tool is the ability to go, ah, although this seems to be real, it's not. It's a dream. So in fact, no one is better at discerning the difference between hallucination and reality than a lucid dreamer, because their entire skill set is based upon it. So in fact, lucid dreaming can be very good for mental health. And I did a talk at the Psychedelic Society recently where they're interested in, because lucid dreaming gives you that capacity to discern between very convincing hallucination, i.e. a dream, and reality, that it could be used to train people before psychedelic experience. So rather than thinking, oh, you know, when the magic mushrooms hit or the ayahuasca hits, oh God, this is real. They'll go, oh wait, no, this is a hallucination caused by the ayahuasca or the psilocybin I've taken. So yeah, you'd think that lucid dreamers would be really like, oh wow, where's reality? Where's dreaming? If you're in that stage, you're not going to have any lucid dreams because you'll be confused in the dream.
Okay, I tried it and I wanted to wait to do it again before you came, after you came, because I wanted to talk to you about it. I got myself very confused because your method seemed to work for me quite quickly. However, I couldn't quite discern whether I was asleep or awake throughout the whole night.
Wow.
I got a bit panicky.
Yeah.
And I was
Did
like...
Did you do your reality checks?
No. Okay. No. I just kept waking up and thinking, am I awake or asleep?
Yeah.
Am I? And I couldn't quite work out.
Did you have any false awakenings, like dreams within dreams?
Yes.
Oh,
well,
yeah, those are scary.
I kept waking up and thinking I was awake, but yeah. I was still dreaming.
Yeah.
And so I got so, I use this loosely, but I got a bit freaked out by it. And I was like, I can't work out whether I'm asleep or awake. I'm now annoyed. So, I'm going to wait until I see you again. But it did work. It was just very confusing.
Yeah. So that's when you need these things called reality checks. So reality checks are things you can do in the dream, in the waking state, to tell if you're definitely dreaming. So or you're awake. So for example, right now we can look at our hands, look away, and look back.
Yep.
And is your hand still the same?
Yeah.
You've still got four fingers of thumb, right?
Yeah.
Okay. See if you can pull your little finger and have the intention that it will stretch. Is it stretching?
No.
No. Okay. See if you can read something. And then look away and read it again. So I'm going to read this little thing here.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, check gravity. Gravity works. Mm-hmm. Okay.
We're jumping up and down.
So we are absolutely awake right now.
Yeah.
If you'd done any of those five things in a pre-lucid dream state, they wouldn't have worked. They would have glitched. Your hand would have changed. Your finger would have stretched. Gravity wouldn't have felt the same. And you would be 95% of the time, Stanford Sleep Laboratory showed, it's almost impossible to read twice in a row. So those are your checks. You know, like in that film Inception, where the dude has so many lucid dreams, he comes out and he's like, Jesus. Oh God, am I awake? Am I asleep? Has his little spinning top.
Yeah.
Those five things we just did, that's your spinning top.
Right.
That's how you know. So you need not freak out again.
Right. I want to go back a stage and I want to go back another stage. We'll get into how you do it in a minute. But one stage I want to go back with is, okay, so the first thing you're going to do, the first thing I'm going to do once I've learned to lucid dream, the first two things I'm going to do, I'm going to fly, obviously.
Standard.
Because that's what you going to do, and then I'm going to try and have sex with people because
I did that for the first 2 years.
That's standard. Now what I worry about is I'm quite straight when it comes to sex, but in my dreams I could possibly go quite avant-garde. I could try something else. Does that then I worry that if you were, say I was quite, I don't know, I decided I wanted sex with a myriad people, or I wanted it a strange way and I could do it in my lucid dreaming. Does that then eke its way into reality and you start going, oh, I'm not satisfied anymore. I want sex the way I do it in my
dreams.
Well,
think of those neural pathways. I mean, this is where it becomes quite serious. Again, when you're having that kind of crazy sex in lucid dream, again, your brain doesn't think I'm dreaming about this. Your brain thinks I'm actually doing it. And we know that the brain lays down neural pathways in a lucid dream in exactly the same way it does in the waking state. Non-lucid dreams, no lower neural pathways. Lucid dreams, neural pathways. So once you're lucid, yeah, kind of be careful what you get up to, because it might affect your waking state.
Because it could be dangerous then.
No, I don't know. Dangerous, but right, it could desires, be non-beneficial.
Yeah, your desires might... Can you imagine, you know, if you spend the whole of your life desiring after something that you can't get in real life, in normal life, rather than dream state, then that could be quite frustrating.
Yeah. I think in the same way as, you know, you could use mindfulness meditation to further egoic fantasy, to kind of push away your problems you don't want to look at. Loads of ways you could use mindfulness for maybe not dangerous ways, but non-beneficially. I think the same as lucid dreaming. All of these things are a blank canvas, which easily could be used for, if not dangerous stuff, non-beneficial stuff. So yeah, it comes down to responsibility. Same as hypnosis, right? Like hypnosis can be used to do amazing things like treat PTSD and help people with nicotine addiction and stuff like that. It can also be used to make someone look like a chicken and run around on stage. The hypnotic trance is identical. Stage hypnosis trance and hypnotic trance for hypnotherapy are the same. The only difference is the use of it. So I like that metaphor for lucid dreaming. You could easily use it just for sex and skateboarding, or you could use it for these kind of deep therapeutic benefits.
Yeah. Yeah, we've all had that dream, haven't we, where we're doing something like skateboarding. It's so brilliant. And you're
good at it.
Yeah. I used to get the flying one a lot, but I realized it's because I used to swim a lot as a kid. And
are you a swim flyer?
Because you float a lot when you dream, when you're floating.
Oh,
basically.
I see. Right.
I'm not flying like Superman. I just spend the whole time just.
Well, I'm really interested in this, the way people fly, because I'm a Superman flyer my dream. Some people are swim flyers. Oh, you're a swim flyer, right? You're a flat flaps.
I don't.
Some people bounce. They see, do I don't. Kind of bouncing.
Yeah, I don't fly anymore. But when I was a kid, I used to fly a lot in my dreams. Do you think when you're a kid, you dream more and more? You're more lucid because you just don't care. You sort of get into your dreams.
Kids naturally have lucid dreams. Yeah, they did a Harvard study. The study was children aged 6 to 16. I'm sure if they started earlier, maybe they would have found some lucid dreams too. But yeah, they concluded that lucid dreaming was a natural phenomenon of childhood development, which is quite cool to hear, because then we know it's not something weird that we're imposing on the brain. It's something we used to do as kids and we forget. Perhaps we forget because we lose our creativity. We lose that spontaneity of childhood. But some people, maybe at 1 in 100, I'd say, make it through to adulthood still lucid dreaming.
I wanted to go back a stage as well, because I'm sure lots of our listeners would have had, because I think, you know, we've all had that horrible dream where we wake up and think our partner's going to cheat on them. Everyone's had that, and it's interesting. Well, not everyone's had it, but I'm sure many of us have had it. And you know, you look at your partner and you think, I can't even talk to you.
Yeah, and you're annoyed with them, like up until lunchtime the next day. It's so weird, isn't it?
Now the reality is, if you go back to the 1920s, the chances of that happening would have been less, because it was tougher to get out of marriage. Now the chances of it are pretty high. That the idea that you can rely on somebody else to be faithful to you is... take this the right way, listeners, but it's a stupid idea, because, you know, the only person you can really rely on is yourself, because you don't know who's going to come along and take it off. But I wonder if that dream people get sometimes, because it's, again, going back to your point earlier, it's a warning. Maybe you picked up a signal when you were out. Maybe there is, or maybe even you're just very conscious of the fact that, you know, all your mates' wives or husbands have gone off and had an affair. So you're going, hold on, this could happen to me as well. Yeah. And it's a preparation.
It could be that, or it could be the other bit of research, like the stuff from the Sorbonne Medical Institute, you know, where they found that those who dreamt about failing their exams did better. So it could be actually that it's something saying, you know, that this won't happen. You know, be aware of the possibility so it doesn't happen. So it depends how you look at it.
So then you become possessive and jealous.
I'm afraid I have no solace to offer for that dream. I get it with my wife, or have had it with my wife, and I'm really annoyed with her. And she'll be saying, look, that's the dream jade. It wasn't me. And I'm like, yeah, but the dream jade, I must have picked it up from somewhere. I start, you know, reeling off this kind of ridiculous reason why it might be true.
But say we went back to the 1920s, people don't leave their marriages. There's no mobile phones. There's no social media to connect with each other. I wonder if as many people had that dream.
That'd be cool, wouldn't it?
Because if the possibilities aren't there as much, the reality. Yeah. And also, you know, you all live in towns and everybody knows your business and whatever. There's not as much traveling. Yeah. So everyone kind of knows that. I imagine that dream wasn't like people have terrible war PTSD after they've been to war. They don't have it if they don't go to war, do they?
So. Yes, although people sometimes still dream of lions, tigers, and bears, even though they never encounter them from a kind of old evolutionary stuff. Like, kids will often still dream of lions, tigers, and bears, as if the brain is kind of preparing itself for what it used to have to deal with, but there's still an evolutionary kind of hangover from that.
I gave up smoking 18, 19 years ago, and sometimes in my dream, I'm smoking and I hate myself.
Oh, that's interesting.
How's that?
Who knows?
When I first gave up, I used to dream that I was a smoker constantly, but it's sort of slowly dwindled.
There's a guy in the book you've got there, actually. I realised I just name dropped my book.
Yeah, Lucid Dreaming Made Easy, Beginner's Guide to Waking Up in Your Dreams.
But there's a case study in there. This guy, it's Antonio.
I love it.
He was a smoker and he got lucid and he called out to meet his brain, like personification of his brain. And this woman turns up and he says, "Can you help me stop smoking? Anytime I think about smoking or want a cigarette, make me think of something else." His brain agrees in the dream and he wakes up. So short lucid dream, and he hasn't smoked since.
Wow.
Now it's one case study. I don't know if there's any kind of long-term proof to that, but he's still not smoking. I wheeled him out at a talk kind of recently, actually. I'm like, "Come to any of my talks for free. You know, you can be the case study guy." And he's still not smoking. It's about three or four years later now.
Who do you teach? When you say you teach it, who are you teaching?
God. I don't know. There's no kind of set demographic.
Is everyone successful?
No. I mean, it depends whether you do it. Like, I'd say, there's like 50 people at a workshop or a retreat or something. I'd say about a third of them, a month later, will be doing the practice. Will have actually kind of really gone into the practice, still doing it, keeping the dream diary, having a successful practice. And then I'd say about 1 in 10 will have a real kind of life-changing dream. So, you know, maybe 5 people out of 50 will leave there, and within a few months, life will be very, very different. I would, you know, if the stats were higher, I'd probably be a millionaire, but I'm happy if I can help, you know, 1 in 10 people really make a difference to their life.
And what are you doing with the Ministry of Defence? Can you say?
No, I can't actually say the thing I'm doing, but I have done a talk. I did a talk at the Ministry of Defence main building at the beginning of 2019. And that was a talk on mindfulness of dream and sleep. So how you can use not only lucid dreaming, but stuff like yoga nidra. So working with the hypnagogic state, certain breath work, working with nightmares, reframing the sleep stages, how that can be useful for veterans, which I've been working with veterans for a few years. But then they picked up on that talk and thought it might be suitable for others, not just veterans.
One of the things you do say actually in your book, which is good, is to stay in that state just before you fall asleep for as long as you can.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I do love about it, because it's very hard to stay awake when you're trying to do that.
Yeah.
You keep on wanting to slip off. And I found it's become an easy way to fall asleep, bizarrely.
Exactly, yes. So that's what I teach to insomniacs, or people who've labeled them insomniacs.
It's really
and
good.
They say, "Wait, no, I need to fall asleep." Yeah. I say, "Yeah, but if I can teach you how not to fall asleep. You'll find the boundary." It's weird, isn't it? Yeah.
It is brilliant. Exactly, and also it's a really nice feeling. And I always say this to people, you know, I'm not really a drug taker, and yet when I get I love going in for operations. That sounds a bit weird, doesn't it? But yes. But I like the stuff they give you to make you fall asleep, and I especially like the pre-op bit where they give you that stuff and you're all woozy and they start asking you to count and you go, that feeling of like slowly dropping away.
Yeah.
You can have that most nights if you want
totally.
To.
Oh, totally. Hypnagogic, it's totally trippy.
It's really lovely, lovely. You feel nice and warm and safe and it's nice. And if you just concentrate, and I'm getting deep here, but you concentrate on your breathing a bit.
Yeah.
And it's a really lovely way of going under. A lot of the things that people say you can, obviously we've just mentioned sleep is important to us, but it can also heal physical ailments, do we think, getting into lucid dreams?
Yeah, there's no scientific research on that, but there's a lot of anecdotal stuff that in the lucid dream state, the placebo effect is amplified. So anyone who used the term just the placebo effect does not understand the placebo effect. I mean, it's the only replicable aspect of all medical trials.
Yeah.
Do you know David Hamilton?
Yes.
Hamilton. I mean, he's got brilliant research on this. I mean, it was his discovery of how powerful the placebo effect was that in many ways led him to leave his medical career and start writing about it. It's incredibly powerful. And because the lucid dream is happening inside your own mind, you're literally in a three-dimensional representation of your own psychology. If you engage the placebo effect from within a lucid dream, it's like placebo max, and it can have a very powerful effect. So let's say you've hurt your elbow, your tennis elbow or something like that. You go into the lucid dream. Okay, I'm in the dream, right? My body is asleep in bed. This is the dream. And then if you were to call something out to the dream, like my elbow is healed of all non-beneficial disease, or I reduce inflammation in my elbow, or even maybe if you put your other hand on your elbow and did some sort of visualized hands-on healing, something like that, because it seems so real, and because the brain thinks it is real in that state, remember, it can, for some people, have a powerful healing effect. Not for everyone, but some people it does. And I say just give it a shot, because it won't do any harm, and at best it could help you. I mean, I've worked with shoulder injuries, a knee injury I had, kind of minor ailments. You know, I'm not saying lucid dreaming can cure cancer or anything, but I think in the same way, I don't think acupuncture can cure cancer. But do I think acupuncture can be a great thing to use alongside Western medical treatment for cancer? Yes. So I think it's kind of the same with lucid dreaming. I think it can be a nice kind of alternative, complementary therapy for people to use.
Mm. Amir Krieger, who was on this podcast, he's a sleep expert from America. You might have heard of him, might not. But he was telling us how important sleep was.
Oh,
yeah. He was saying adults need between 7 and 9 hours. They're putting so many... The other side to not dreaming and not having sleep is if you're not getting enough, you're going to get ill. They're putting dementia and Alzheimer's.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no biological thing that you can measure in a lab that isn't adversely affected by lack of sleep.
Yeah.
Nothing you can measure. Like we're not talking loads, just half an hour asleep more. Like any listeners now, if they could just increase their regular sleep by half an hour or even an hour a day, that would be massive changes. I mean, there's the study, I think you've from what you've said, I assume you've read Matthew Walker's book.
I haven't, I've listened to him interviewed a load of times. The podcasts are actually better.
Yeah, Rogan podcast good. And that is even better than the book. Yeah. He talks about a study where... Yeah. The days where we lose, well, it could be the same in this country, where we lose an hour, gain an hour, you know, and the clocks go forward and back. There's like an increase in heart attacks, 25% increase in heart attacks the day where we lose an hour, and the day where we gain an hour, a 20% decrease in heart attacks the next day. That's just 1 hour.
Well, I spent the whole of January annoying everyone who was doing either dry January, they were going to the gym more, or they were doing diet things. And I said to them all, how much are you sleeping?
Yeah.
And they're like 5 or 6 hours. I said,
oi.
I'd be first of all going to them, right, forget the diet, forget the exercise, get 7 to 9 hours. Yeah. Your life will be increased dramatically. Yeah. You'll have such a better life, because that's what we need as adults. But everyone keeps, for some reason, you're considered lazy for sleeping a lot, and you're considered brave and hardcore if you don't manage to survive on less sleep. Famously, Thatcher and Reagan.
Yeah, and look what happened to them.
Both of them died of dementia. Yep. Both of them only reckon they have 4 or 5 hours of sleep. So, yeah.
All the people that, I mean, there is a genetic condition called sleep. The kind of colloquialism for it is the sleepless elite. It's like 1 in 10,000 people have this. So it's very, very rare, which is a genetic condition that allows people to survive on less than 5 hours sleep and not be adversely affected. But it's so rare, you probably haven't got it.
Amir Krieger talks about that actually on the podcast. He said there's this rare condition, but
he
said he's yet to meet someone with it.
Oh, there you go.
And he's been doing sleep therapy since the 70s, or sleep medicine since therapies. Okay, it says that you can, all right, we talked about combating addictions, talked about physical illnesses, talked about mindfulness and mental health. Well, we haven't really covered that. I mean, once you get into your lucid dreaming and you've got depression, can you cure it by going into your lucid dreaming?
Someone's just on their master's thesis on that, actually. So someone thinks you can. Yeah, a friend of mine, Lana Sackwild is her name. She's just done her master's thesis in transpersonal psychology, studying exactly that, lucid dreaming as a treatment for depression. I haven't read it, but I know if she just spent a couple of years doing that as a thesis, there's probably some evidence for it. Mm. But I haven't seen it yet.
And you can also improve your athletic ability.
That's proved, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, that's very cool. So they did these studies. Again, it's all based on the fact the brain thinks you're awake, right? So I'll tell you the last study, because I was part of it. This was a 2019 study. They got like 25 martial artists. We had to go into the lucid dream state and practice martial arts.
Are you a martial artist?
Yeah.
Which one did you do?
Kickboxing.
Right, okay, cool.
we had to practice a specific kick sequence and then see if we got better the next day. And they give you all these tests and things, forms to fill out. And some people get their brains scanned and stuff like that. Anyway, 81.3% of people involved in the study got better at martial arts after practicing their lucid dream. I was one of the 11% that didn't. I flatlined, so it was really embarrassing. But 81.3% of the others, they got better. They'd done the same study on squats. You get people to go in their lucid, see how many squats they can do, get them to go into their lucid dream, do squats. The next day they can do more squats. You can actually increase your personal best in squats. This is nuts. Some people even had increased muscle mass. Now, of course, that's funny because the muscle mass wasn't being increased by what you're doing in the dreams because you weren't actually doing a squat. But by doing squats in the lucid dreams, you were strengthening the neural pathways and the kind of electrical connections towards the squat. So the next day you could do more, and that led to increased muscle mass. So you still got to train in the daytime, but you can optimize your training by practicing in the lucid dream. That's a fact.
So I read a book on tennis, how to play tennis once, and it said the idea that you can hit a tennis ball is a miracle anyway, because you know, to fire off the nerves or whatever to actually hit a moving ball at that speed is phenomenal. But they said one of the bits they said in the book was you learn tennis not through listening and not through just often not through just being repetitive, but actually by watching.
Yeah.
And by watching someone do it well, you will take that away, dream about it, and you will come back being able to put the brain will work out the pathways to hit the ball. Do you believe that?
Yeah, and I know somebody who's done that. David Hamilton. He talked about it in one of his talks. He got a clip of Andy Murray doing the perfect serve.
Right.
And he would watch it. I don't know how many times, but dozens of times a day. It's kind of a thought experiment, see if this works. And then he shows you in the PowerPoint presentation his ranking in... no, it's not Lockerbie. Where does he live?
Dunblane,
yes. And it shows his ranking in the Dunblane, you know, local kind of tennis thing. He's literally right at the bottom. And after like a few months of watching this this kind of gif he had made of Andy Murray doing the perfect serve, he's like right up at the top of the rankings. If anyone has said that, I'd say that's bullshit. But anyone who's met David Hamilton, no, that guy is solid, honest man.
Yeah.
And he says it was from repeatedly watching that. He didn't mention then dreaming about it, but I'm pretty sure if you watch the same video clip dozens of times a day, you're definitely going to dream about
apparently
it.
Apparently that's where it works, though. It works when you dream.
Oh, yeah.
That's where it sets it all. Yeah, that's not when you're awake. Yeah, it's when you dream.
Again, that study with the mice finding the cheese in the maze, you stop them dreaming at night, they can't find the cheese the next day. You have to dream about something to integrate it into the memory.
What am I going
to
do? I've got to try that. I've got to, what do I really want to be able
to
do?
Yeah, do a test on it.
Yeah, I've got to think about something and then watch it. Because now we've got phones. We can, you know, we can do it all day long. The other thing...
Oh, sorry, that dreaming thing is just, if anyone's like learning for an exam or learning a new language, they did a study at Harvard. Half the group were allowed a 40-minute nap in the middle of the day. They learnt the language 25% quicker than the group who didn't. So if you are learning, if you're studying, if you're working on a new skill and you're not getting enough sleep at night and thus not enough dreaming, you will simply not learn the skill. So sleep is so, so important to be better at life, to be optimized.
Yeah.
And yet we have this thing, like you say, people think we're lazy if we sleep too much, or we have this kind of thing where we're proud of how little we sleep. We should not be proud of it. I'm not saying we should be ashamed of it, but we shouldn't be proud.
Well, they're getting athletes now to sleep ridiculously long time, aren't they? Because they're working out so much, they get them to have a sleep during the day. And some of the great athletes, I can't remember who was talking about it not so long ago. LeBron James, I think, or someone like that was talking about how much sleep they had. And
it's really serious
now. Stupid amount of sleep a day now because they exercise so much.
Yeah,
so.
And then we've just got the facts. We've got the science to back it up. It's not a choice. It's like you'll be told you have to sleep this amount.
All right, there's three aspects, I believe, to lucid dreaming. Is that correct?
I'm not sure. What are they?
I
think I gave you those first three tips. Is that what we're talking about? Yeah, there are loads more, but we can look at those first three tips.
Because obviously you want to, let's give us the basics of how you lucid dream. Do you mind doing that?
Yeah, so that'll be those first three, the three Ds, I call them. So the first one is dream recall.
Right.
So setting the mind to remember our dream. So we're dreaming every night. Anyone who's listening says they don't dream. You do dream, unless you've had a stroke recently or a heavy head injury. But even then, after a couple of months, you'll start dreaming again normally. So everybody dreams because it's so useful to our biological health. We need it. It's our survival mechanism. So you definitely dream. Only difference is, do you remember your dreams? Most people don't, simply because they haven't tried. They say, oh, well, I don't dream, so I didn't try. Well, now you know you dream, try. So it could be as simple as tonight when you're sitting on the edge of your bed before you go to sleep, just say, look, I listened to this podcast. Matey said I'm definitely dreaming, so I'm going to try and remember my dreams tonight. I'm really, you know, I want to remember my dreams tonight. First thing tomorrow morning, I'm going to think, what was I dreaming about? That can be enough for many people. But if you want to kind of supercharge that technique, then as you fall asleep at night, you pass through the hypnagogic, which we've spoken a lot about today, you're in a natural state of hypnosis. You look at the brain waves of someone in the hypnagogic state, they're deep alpha and theta, which are the same brain waves as hypnotherapy. So you are literally in a hypnotized state when you fall asleep. So you're basically going to use a hypnotic suggestion. So your eyes are closed, you're feeling very drowsy, you might have that feeling of heaviness in the body, you might be getting those little jerks, you might be getting the kind of hallucinatory images on the back of your eyelids. All of those are telling you I'm in the hypnagogic. Once you're in there, start reciting over and over in your mind, tonight I remember my dreams, I have excellent dream recall. Tonight I remember my dreams, I have excellent dream recall. And you can be doing that like 21 times.
That's what I did that was the exact what I did when I had.
And did it work? Do you remember?
Yeah,
that was
when I did all that, and then that's when I started going in and out of the couldn't work out whether I was awake or asleep.
Oh, okay. So you jumped through a few stages.
Oh,
there.
Go on then. Carry on.
Well, no, that's great.
I did that.
Because initially that won't lead to lucid dreaming.
Right,
it'll just lead
then.
To you remembering your dreams.
Yeah.
But that's great if it works so well. So fall asleep doing that.
Yeah.
Like every night if you can, you know, for at least kind of 7 nights straight. Most people will find that effective within a couple of nights. They'll start remembering their dreams. But if you can, be doing it all the time. Next stage is to write down your dreams. So dream diary, documenting your dreams in some way. So write your dreams into your phone, write them on a piece of paper, write them in a notebook, whatever. Don't need to write down loads. We're not interpreting the dream, like no more than kind of 5 or 10 minutes max. Think about reviewing a film. You know, you wouldn't write down every scene in a film, but you'd write down, this is the main narrative, these are the main characters, these are my favorite scenes. So think about that, maybe 5 minutes writing down your dreams in the morning or in the middle of the night if you think you're going to remember them, if you think you're going to forget them. And the reason we write down the dreams is to spot patterns. So it's not to interpret. So, you know, I've written down my dream in my phone, and then I read through it and I say, okay, are there any patterns in this dream that could indicate that I'm dreaming? Is there basically anything that could tell I was dreaming? So I look through, I'm walking down the street with my wife in London. Okay, no dream signs there because that really happens. But at the end of the street, I see Donald Trump standing next to a blue dragon. Okay, those are my dream signs. That's a third D. So Donald Trump isn't in my life usually, neither a blue dragon. So I make a trigger there. I say, okay, right. So if the next time I see Donald Trump or a blue dragon, I will know that I'm dreaming because I've just made a trigger now. Blue dragons, Donald Trump, equal dreaming. I've made that connection. If you do that constantly enough, by the end of the week, you'll find you've got dozens of these dream signs. And you start to create not only a catalogue in your mind of what you dream about, but also a critical reflective attitude in your mind that is now on the lookout for those things. And even better is if you can find a recurring one. If like at the end of the week, you realize, God, I dream of my dead grandma like a couple of times a week, or a couple of times a week, I dream I'm back at school or I'm in the place I used to work, but I no longer work. You know, finding some impossible thing that happens in the dream that is repeating, that can be really good because then you're on the lookout for it. But essentially that third D is checking your dream signs, seeing patterns of impossibility that emerge in your dream, and then making a trigger that the next time you see those impossible things, you will definitely know that you're dreaming. And then eventually you'll be dreaming, Donald Trump will appear and you'll go, Donald Trump, he's one of my dream signs. What? Oh my God, I'm
right,
in a dream.
Right, yeah, so I hadn't done that. I'd written my dreams down the first night, and then the second night I'd been doing my affirmations and I went to sleep that night. And that's when I became all over the place, disorientated, mm-hmm. because I couldn't work out where I was. And I woke up from my dream, but I was still, you know, I was one of those things where I was like, I can't just... I didn't know where I was, and I got, you know, disoriented.
Yeah, I mean, the fourth technique that we haven't done is reality checks.
I should have done that.
Well,
yeah.
No, it's my bad. I just didn't expect that you'd jump to lucidity straight away, so I didn't give that next technique. But that's the next one. So if you're a bit kind of, where am I in the dream, then to use those checks that we looked at earlier.
Right. Yeah. It's quite an amazing thing, isn't it, to do?
Super cool. It makes going to bed exciting. That's fun. You know,
well,
like,
also, I think it's good to start looking at your dreams. I do genuinely. The one thing I want to point out, though, is if you do wake up and you are anxious or you have anxiety or you had nightmares or you have one, it's not a bad thing, is it?
No, and definitely write down your nightmares. You know, a lot of people only write down their kind of special dreams or their nice dreams. Definitely write down the anxiety ones and the nightmares, because a nightmare is a dream that's shouting. It's shouting to get your attention to look at a certain aspect of your life, a trauma or a fear or a phobia or an anxiety. So if we push our nightmares away, refuse to talk about them, refuse to write them down, wake ourselves up from them, then they have to come back, and they come back louder each time. So if you ever become lucid in a nightmare, my advice is to stay in it. Don't wake yourself from a nightmare. That's why your nightmares recur. I mean, that nightmare where you're having a dinner date with your favorite, you know, sexy celebrity, why did you only have that once? Because you loved the dream. You didn't reject it. You wanted to be in that dream all day. But that nasty nightmare, you pushed it away. You didn't want to think about it, so it has to come back again. Nightmares can be very helpful for us. Anxiety dreams are definitely helpful for us. Nightmares can be helpful for us.
Yeah, it's all your brain working out life.
Yeah, you just got this genius. This is something else to say. The mental capacity of a dreaming mind is higher. You know, it's not less. You're dealing with a higher intelligence here. This is why sometimes the metaphors in dreams are so complex. You think, wow, how did my dreaming mind think of that cool symbol, that cool metaphor?
See, I get very confused here because you talk about, I like it, but you're talking about yourself as though that's not you. It's something else.
It's still you, but it's a different part. So I'm using the term dreamer, right? As if it's something else.
Yeah, you're talking about everything. You're talking about your thought processes like it's not you. And then you're talking about your dream like it's something else which is happening. And then you talk about your brain as though it's not Charlie. Mm. But it is Charlie, obviously. So I suppose you're looking at it from a place
I'm not sure the brain's as much Charlie as if we were playing classical music out of your radio, the radio was classical music. The radio was an orchestra.
Yeah.
You know, the brain is transmitting this Charliness. But again, I'm not going to get into the hard problem of consciousness.
I'm fascinated because you are talking about consciousness, and I like the way that you're looking on. And it's like you're aware that it's different. And there's different part. There's different things firing which make you who you are.
I definitely don't. I think the big illusion is we think that our egocentric sense of self, this like me, my I program, this I am Charlie, we think that's it. And that is a tiny fragment of who we are. There's that, then there's the unconscious mind, and then there's an observer over all of them that we meet in the lucid dream.
Well, we're the observer, aren't we? Because I've just realized.
Yeah, you're right. We're the observer. We're not the ego.
Yeah, because we keep on saying, it's your brain warning you. It's like the brain's like a refrigerator or something,
exactly.
Or a computer.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you are your brain as well. But it's funny with our conscious mind, and it works well with dreaming because you can actually see that it's something else. Whereas in every day, your thought process keep on going on.
Yeah, we think we're our thoughts, right?
We think we're our thoughts, which is where we all make our mistakes.
All of us. Suffering comes from thinking we're our thoughts.
Yeah, suffering comes from thought processes. And obviously because we're all connected to our phones and things so much, then we're getting them bombarded us.
Yeah.
Charlie, I ask everybody the same questions. By the way, how long did it take to write this book? Because it's quite in depth. I love this book, by the way. It's just one of those books, because it's about sleeping and we all do it, it's very hard to put down.
Yeah, everyone's got an opinion. You might not believe it all, but you think, oh, that's quite interesting.
Oh, no, because you're very good in it because you don't say, you're not going, hey, this is absolute fact. You're saying, this is what this is what the thought process is, and this is the proof, like you've done on this podcast.
Oh, I'm glad.
Yeah, so you're not saying everything's fact. You're just, you know, but it is good and it's interesting. How long did it take to write that?
Well, weirdly, that was my second book. So I wrote this book called Dreams of Awakening, which is my first book that took me like 4 years to write. And then it did well. So they asked me to do a follow-up, like a dummy's guide to lucid dreaming. So actually I wrote that in like 9 months.
All right, okay.
In many ways, that's a way more accessible book because the first book has really got my soul in it. It's all about the journey through Buddhism and that kind of stuff. Whereas that, the Made Easy one, is a really good, like, what foods help with dreaming? Like, what happens with the moon? Like, have we got the facts about science? It's much more accessible. It took about 9 months.
What does happen with the moon?
Okay, this is cool. This German scientist, right? I heard this on Radio 4 live, like maybe 6 or 7 years ago. He set out to disprove any relationship between moon cycles and sleep and dream impact. He ended up proving it. And he went on Radio 4 going, but I was trying to disprove it. He basically showed that around the time of full moons, you have more REM sleep, so more dreams, less deep sleep. Your journey through the hypnagogic takes longer. And one other thing I can't remember.
Why?
I can't remember. It'll say in the book.
Right, okay. and because you brought it up, what foods should you eat to get better dreaming?
Stuff with B vitamins in them. So like B6, like if, you know, like Barocca. You ever taken Barocca when you got a hangover? Those kind of a fizzy.
I haven't, but I know it.
Like if you were to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and bosh a Barocca, like high, like loads of B vitamins in it, and then go back to sleep, you would have more vivid dreams. We know that as a fact. Because B12 and B6 especially increase blood flow to the parts of the brain that produce vivid dreaming. Just because they're vivid doesn't mean they're lucid, but the more vivid they are, the easier it is to recognize.
Can your wife lucid dream?
Yeah, she's much better than me.
If you are, how come?
She's a natural. She never forgot how to do it. She made it into adulthood as a natural lucid dreamer.
Did you meet her through lucid dreaming?
No, we met through, she used to be a breakdance teacher at Royal Academy of Dance. And I used to run the like British breakdance championships. I used to put on big breakdance events. Yeah. So we met through that. And then we were kind of dating. And she was saying, I was telling her what I did very, because I just started lucid dreaming then. I was easing out of the music world and into that, but hadn't done it professionally yet. And she was saying, oh, I do that. And I was like, well, you don't. I can teach you how. But, and she went, no, I do it.
Oh.
And my ego was a bit like, do you? And then the first night we spent together, actually, I woke up about 2 a.m. to this sound of her tapping onto her phone. And I was like, what are you doing? She went, oh, I had a lucid dream. And I said, did you? And she went, yeah, I told you I have lucid dreams. I went back to sleep. A couple of hours later, woke up, she had a second one. She had two lucid dreams, just spontaneous on our first night we spent together. And I was like, I'm in love. So yeah, she's a natural. She's really good. But then when she started doing some of the techniques that I was working with, then she got really good. Because if you have like natural capacity alongside verified techniques, then you get really good.
Do you still have a little bit of lino lying around just every now and then, break out a windmill?
There's like one, if you had a stills camera, I can look like I can break them. if you had a video camera, you'd know I can't.
The reason why I ask about your wife is if your wife decides to have a lucid dream and decides to hang out maybe with Brad Pitt for the night, maybe Brad and Leonardo DiCaprio, maybe she decides she's watched that movie and thinks, hey, I'd quite fancy a night with Brad and Leo tonight. Is that cheating?
This has come up in conversation, and no, we don't class it cheating, no. So we're allowed to do what we like in our lucid dreams, just as long as it doesn't kind of spill over into the waking state.
What's that thing they call it in Friends? A laminate, isn't it? Isn't that what it's known as? A laminate. You're allowed to have sex with somebody else.
Oh, some celebrity or something.
Yeah, if you meet a celebrity, you're allowed to have sex. So, but in your dreams, you can do whatever you want.
Absolutely.
All right.
Benefit of lucid dreaming.
So it's not cheating. Okay, interesting. Right, I have questions that I ask everyone, so I'm going to ask you the same ones. What one piece of advice would you like to give our listeners that has been invaluable to your life?
Be kind, I think, wherever possible, and it's probably always possible.
Okay. What's something you think people should know?
How important the third of your life you spend sleeping is, and that it directly impacts the two-thirds that you're awake, so work with it.
Yeah, I always wonder whether the government, if you ever go to the NHS hospital or doctors and stuff, they've got all the messages all over about diet and everything else. Maybe they should do a campaign on sleep.
Totally they should.
Because
it would reduce every other ailment.
Yeah.
There is no ailment that isn't decreased by optimized sleep.
But we have to change the mindset of the public. Like as soon as you become a parent, you go, that's it, no sleep. And then everyone agrees with you rather than going, hey, how do we make it so I can still sleep 7 to 9 hours every night?
Yeah.
Amir Krieger said a lot of new mums, they think they're putting postnatal depression sometimes down to the fact there's a lack of sleep.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because you're up all night and then you try and get back on with doing the you know, everyday life and whatever else you have to put into your day and or going back to work. And it's tough. All right. Is there something you've changed your mind about?
Veterans and the military.
Oh, go on.
I had very kind of liberal, millennial, prejudiced views on the military and especially veterans, assuming, you know, they made their choice and how could they do that? They signed up to be professional killers, all that kind of stuff. And then 7 years ago when I started working with veterans, that changed very, very quickly. Once I started hearing their stories, getting to know them, and now I'm very, very supportive of the veteran community. I wouldn't say I'm supportive of the military industrial complex, but I know it is a way more complex situation than I thought it was 7 years ago. And that a lot of people are haunted by choices they made in their 20s. And if I think some of the choices I made in my early 20s, think I'm haunted by them still 30, 40 years later and still being judged by those choices, that seems like a terrible ghost. and burden to be carrying. So I've really changed my mind on that. And I think the way we treat veteran communities in this country is not as bad as some countries, but it could be way, way better. And I think we need to think carefully about how we judge veterans for the choices they've made.
Mm. Something you said there is really interesting as well, is judging people for what decisions they made in their late teens, early 20s. Yeah. We're all a bit rogue then, aren't we?
God, I was a full-on like drug dealer in gang stuff. And like, God, if someone judged me what I was doing when I was 17, they would not come to any of my workshops.
And the thing is, that might have made it onto social media, some description, and then you're judged like that. We're holding people responsible for decisions they made, and our personalities change dramatically.
Yeah. That's why I try and be very open with my past as soon as people come to my workshops and talk about this openly. So there's no kind of, oh, this guy thinks he's a Buddhist, holier than thou, lucid dreaming teacher. It's like, no, I was fucked up, man. But I did find Buddhism and meditation, and it did un-F me slightly.
Are you doing meditation?
Meditation? Yeah, man, I lived in the Buddhist center for like 8 years. So yeah, I do a lot of meditation. Well, I don't know, a lot. I pretend to meditate quite a lot.
Do you like it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's so many meditation forms. You know, I did a retreat, just a week retreat recently, and someone was asking me, oh, just sitting in silence for 8 hours a day, how did you do it? And I was like, I was only in silence for about 1 hour a day. Yeah. Because the Tibetan Buddhist meditations are often with chanting, mantra recitation, visualization, very busy. So if you've got there's a type of meditation for everyone, and just sitting in silence, doing like calm abiding or watching your breath, for many people isn't most beneficial, especially not for veterans.
I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it right. Is it metta?
Metta, loving kindness.
Yeah, I tried some of that the other day. Yeah. I'm trying it all. I like experimenting. Brilliant. So, and I try and do it. As I say, I'm not very good at it, but it's what, you know, practice. I'm not very good at playing the guitar, but you know, if I keep going.
Yeah, and also try as a group. You know, if I tried to teach myself yoga alone, I wouldn't know how to do bloody yoga. Yeah. You got to go to a group, a weekly group, and then eventually after maybe a couple of years of going to yoga class, then you have enough tools to practice yoga in your front room. Yeah. The same with meditation. So I'd say go to a group, because otherwise it can be lonely and you think you're not doing it right, and you try and do too long.
Yeah. Again, what I like about these things, though, is for ages, for someone like me, I'm sitting there going, mumbo jumbo meditation. It's easier to take that stance on life, you know. And then suddenly when they start producing scientific evidence, you're like, oh, shit, it does work. All right, I'll give it a go.
Yeah. And then the science lab of your mind, you're like, well, do this for 10 minutes a day.
Yeah.
And after a week, I feel a bit better. I'm like less angry with people. I'm kinder to myself. Well, I better keep doing it. Mm. And then if not, stop doing it.
Mm. Any life hacks?
Life hacks. Let's do a sleep one. I would say try and find your optimal sleep. In the same way, let's say we're making the same dish. We're making spaghetti bolognese, and we make it every week. And every week we try slightly different combinations of spices, trying to get that perfect, you know, extra wine, less wine, stuff like that. Because it's something we eat all the time, and we're making slight adjustments to it. We need to do the same with sleep. People say, oh, I sleep 6 hours a day, or I sleep 8 hours. Well, why and when did you decide for that? Well, it's just my lifestyle. That's how I do it. Well, see if you can shift your lifestyle, because it could be if you sleep 8.5 hours, you're going to hit your optimal health. Or it could be you need to be sleeping 7.5 hours or 9 hours or whatever. But the amount of people who don't kind of experiment with their sleep to find their optimum. And so I did, and my optimum is 9 hours. If I can go to bed, you know, 11 o'clock at night, wake up 8 o'clock in the morning, next day, no nap, no yawns, no coffee, I can do 2 hours kickboxing in the evening. You know, I'm there. Yeah. So find your optimum. How often can I sleep for 9 hours a week? Maybe only 3 days. 9 hours in a go. Maybe only 3 days out of a week. But still, I know that that's my optimum. That's what I'm trying to hit. So that'd be my
life. My favorite thing I'm doing at the moment with sleep is trying to go to bed early enough so that I can wake up naturally before my alarm.
Oh, that's cool.
Because that is the nicest feeling in the world. When you wake up naturally, it's $1 million.
Yeah.
So I try, I've been going to bed at 10 recently just so I can wake up.
Oh, that's good. Oh, there's another little life hack there. Have a alarm sound that you like. You know, if your alarm is meh, 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 first thing to hit your body is cortisol and adrenaline, and we wonder why we're having a bad day. Whereas if you wake up like with your favorite piece of music, like the piece of music that wakes me up, I want to wake up to listen to it.
Right.
Because it's such a beautiful piece of music.
Yeah, but don't you hate it after a while?
No.
No, okay.
No, because it's coming on after 9 hours. So.
All right, final two. Final two. Can you recommend a book?
I recommend lots of books.
What not your own, but just one book?
I would, of course, not my own. Let's go for The Art of Happiness by the Dalai Lama. That was the first book I ever read about Buddhism when I was 16 years old. And I read it on a long flight to Australia. And I remember now I can look back and I got on that flight, a cynical, skeptical 16-year-old. And I got off that flight thinking I was a Buddhist. Because I read that book and I thought, I agree with everything this guy's saying. So The Art of Happiness by the Dalai Lama.
Beautiful. And what's the final question? What's the meaning of life?
No idea. But maybe to find happiness, to be kind to people, to wake up.
Wake up. Is that, what do you mean by waking up? Finding consciousness?
I think waking up from the kind of illusion of separateness, from the illusion of duality, from the illusion of egocentricity.
Charlie, I've got a good question for you. Sorry, did you finish there? Because I felt like I interrupted you.
Yeah.
Okay. Because you're discussing going through states of lucid dreaming and you talk about being awake and you talk about consciousness, a question that I'd like to ask you is, what happens when you die? I know you're going to say, I don't know, but because none of us really do know. But what's your, have you got a theory?
Well, I mean, I'm into Buddhism, so I
reincarnation.
Yeah, I believe that, second law of thermodynamics, right? Energy cannot be destroyed, simply move from one place to another. I'm a ball of energy, just as you are. So that energy has to go somewhere when we die. I don't think it's going like directly into, this Charliness is now entering someone else and Charlie is reincarnated. But I think the energy system that is animating Charlie has to go back into another energy system, has to reanimate something else. Otherwise, where does the energy go?
So you come back as a human?
No, the Buddhist view is, again, people say the same, but population increase and decline, how does that work with reincarnation? There's the human realm, the animal realm, and then there are four other realms which are non-animate that we can't see, which you can also get incarnated in. And there's other planets you could get reincarnated on if you want the full Buddhist view.
Right.
I mean, this is Harry Potter stuff, man. I don't know if I believe all that. But what I do believe is the energy's got to go somewhere. So I believe the energy.
But the energy's not. The energy's not contained in the atoms, which make us up, or is it the consciousness?
I think atom is.
Is energy consciousness in your mind?
Don't know.
Someone said something good the other day that because I'm made up of so many atoms, like billions of atoms. Is it millions or billions? I don't know.
No idea. Let's probably go billions.
Let's go billions. We used to be millionaires. Now we're billionaires. Let's go billions of atoms. Because I'm made up of billions of atoms. Those atoms could have come from anywhere, right? Stars. Yeah. And stuff like that. Or other celebrities. There could be a bit of Elvis in me, or Hitler. Yes, Mark. Or Hitler. If either of them are dead, because they could all be living in South America, but there could be any one of those greats. So I'm not sure I should call Adolf Hitler a great. No, he's infamous anyway. Charlie Lurt, it's been fantastic speaking to you.
Thank you.
Really enjoyed it. If people want to follow you, where do they go?
My website, charliemorley.com, or I'm on Instagram and Facebook and stuff, Charlie Morley, Lucid Dreaming Teacher.
And I'd recommend giving it a go. The book's called Lucid Dreaming, Made Easy, Beginner's Guide to Waking Up in Your Dreams. Thanks a lot, Charlie.
Thanks a lot, man. It's been a pleasure.
Charlie there. I thoroughly enjoyed speaking to him. Sleep is so important, isn't it, Mark? How's your sleep? How is your sleep, Mark?
Good. I've been finding it harder to get to sleep, weirdly, recently. But then it's great still.
Have you always been one of those guys who can sleep all the way through?
No, if I've got bad anxiety, I can't.
Oh, I find that I can. I tend to wake up now, but then just recently I'm able to get back to sleep again. It's interesting that
the old bladder plays a part in this.
Well, sometimes, yeah, but other times you sort of wake up and you think, well, I might as well go to the toilet because I've woken up. But interesting that he needs 9 hours sleep, because I've always thought I needed eight. I'm thinking maybe nine now. I'm thinking maybe nine.
It's just it's how early you got to go to bed, isn't it? That's the thing.
Yeah, I've. But by the way, on lucid dreaming, I always remember my dreams, but I've never been lucid dreaming. I've never can get in and interact with my dreams.
Have you? Oh, I can.
Can you?
Yes, I didn't know. I've never known what it was called.
You're naturally able to do it.
Yeah, I know I'm dreaming. So it's not. I don't wake up in a dream, but I know when I'm in a dream, I go, "It's just okay. This is just a dream."
It's like that Arnie Schwarzenegger thing. What's that thing where he goes to? What's it called? That Total Recall.
Right.
Is it like that for you then? Every night you go to bed, you think, oh.
I'm aware I'm in a dream.
Can you order? You don't affect them. You can't do something in it.
I make decisions in it. Let's say I make decisions I wouldn't normally make when I'm awake, when I'm living.
Well, so could you potentially, like, say you're dreaming about Liverpool, you could go and you're watching them, you could go, well, I might as well go on the pitch and have a kick
about. No, it's more like, it's a shame this is a dream.
Right, okay.
But a lot of flying. There is so much flying in my dreams. Flying and driving car. I don't have a drive. I've never driven. I do a lot of driving cars.
A lot of flying?
Yeah, so much flying.
But where do you fly?
Just all around. Just have a look down.
But you flap?
Flap, yeah. I sort of have to do a little running and then I sort of... But I know it's a drill. I know this is... I'd love to be able to do this in real life.
Do you have feathery wings or leathery wings?
No, it's
wings?
Just arms.
Well, you don't have wings.
I just... In my dreams, my arms are so powerful that it can lift 75 stone of human off the ground.
But what's the science behind that, the dynamics? If you've got no feathers or anything. Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. If you were, though, Mark, to have wings, would you opt for feathery wings or leathery wings?
Feathers would be nice, wouldn't they?
Well, I don't know, because you wear a leather jacket, wouldn't you?
I know, but you're talking leathery, like just lots of skin, leathery skin.
No, you'd probably have them kind of like, they'd kind of be black leather, wouldn't it? Well, that's pretty gross, isn't it? But it's pretty gross having feathers coming out of you as well. Having wings is gross, Mark. You're better off just flying using your arms, you're right.
It's a flapping technique, Tim. It works every night.
Yeah. So it's interesting because I don't have those. My dreams are never very. I don't have fantasy dreams.
My dreams are very vivid, but I know. But I know I'm in them.
The other day I was listening to the Fugees. What's that song by the Fugees? I was listening to that in my dream, and I just remember going to someone. Why are we listening to this? It's really old. And they were going, it's good to dance to, though, isn't it? That's literally my dream.
My dreams are a bit better.
Are they?
Yeah.
Damn you, you bastard, having better dreams than me.
Yeah, I know, but you've got a better life than me. So,
I hate you for that.
So I win on the dreamscape, you win on the lifescape.
So then if you're just...
If you're interested in this, watch that film Vanilla Sky. I keep telling you to watch it. It's so good.
Has that got Tom Cruise in it?
I know it's not a Tom Cruise film, though. There's an original called Open Your Eyes, a Spanish film.
Right.
And they both got Penelope Cruz in. She does her role again in Vanilla Sky. It's so good.
What is it about?
It sort of spoils it knowing it's what it's about. But watch it because it's all about what we're talking about today.
I wonder if you can lucid dream and you can do it well and you can go into your dreams, then it doesn't matter what you do during the. You know, you could just have pretty crap life because you think every night I go to bed, I could have some fantasies, some exciting life. You can live your life through your dreams. That could be quite good, couldn't it? Anyway, this podcast is sponsored by Cooker.
Turn on the cooker. Cooker spelled with a Q-U. Turn on the cooker. And instantly make a brew. Turn on the cooker. Cooker spelled with a Q-U. Turn on the cooker. Hot water for vegetables too.
Yeah, 100 degree boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. It does your hot water. It does your cold water. It does your 100 degree boiling hot water for your brews. Make your brews, do your vegetables. It also does chilled filtered water and does chilled sparkling filtered water, which is really nice. I love it. Thank you so much to Cooker for sponsoring our podcast. I do really like it. We're so lucky to actually have someone who sponsors the podcast with a product that I absolutely adore. Yeah. So I had the product before they sponsored us, which was great.
You've got a cooker in real life. I've got a cooker in my dreams.
In your dreams?
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. Jeez, you think, oh, I'm going to sleep tonight.
Sparkling water on top.
Sparkling water.
Come on.
Oh, that's absolutely brilliant. All right. Thanks a lot for joining us for this podcast. We'll see you all very soon. For the time being, peace and love, Joy.
Bye! Thank you for listening to the Dear Lovejoy podcast, written and hosted by Tim Lovejoy and produced by Mark Augustin. If you would like to contact us, then our email address is dearlovejoypodcast@gmail.com. Or Tim is on Twitter at Tim Lovejoy and on Instagram at @TimLovejoy_official.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.